This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And your number is 877-217-5757. A few times this week, we have talked about the life and legacy of Charles Elson Buddy Romer III, Louisiana's 52nd governor, who died Monday at the age of 77. And now there are reports that provide information about his services. There will be one here in Baton Rouge. The one at Baton Rouge will be at Estruma Baptist Church next Tuesday, 9 o'clock visitation until service at 11 o'clock. And then next Thursday, the 27th, there will be a service in his home area, First United Methodist Church in Shreveport. The visitation is at 9:30 and service at 11 o'clock. So Buddy Romer getting a farewell, not a state funeral of sorts, as Kathleen Blanco received, but nonetheless, many have shown affection for the governor. And if things go according to plans, we will hear from his political consultant this hour, Raymond Strother. We start with Mark Ballard of The Advocate, and we'll get Mark's take. He was around when Buddy Romer was governor, 1988 to 1992, and not so long ago, we ranked the governors in Louisiana during our lifetime, and Mark and I are of the same vintage. And Buddy Romer is one of those who only served one term, but he was a reformer, and he left a mark on our state. And certainly his vision is something that cannot be discarded, Mark.
No, I agree. In a job that's transactional, I mean, that's basically what they do all day is cut deals, that he also tried to put on a vision of where we need to go, which is something that I think the state sorely missed, is, you know, where we need to go. And a lot of the stuff that he did, I think that, you know, and people don't really recognize and for instance, yesterday, the REC of the Revenue Estimating Conference, which decides how much money we actually have to spend, or the state has to spend, and he was the one that kind of brought that in. Before that time, they basically sat on the floor and said, you know, well, what's the price of oil going to be? And they set the price of oil based on how much money they needed to raise. And he was the one that kind of imposed this sort of, why don't we, use data and statistics to make that decision rather than kind of guess at it, how much that we need. And that's a very important thing. He also started a lot of the changes in education that we saw with the community colleges, mm-hmm. and within the public school systems and higher education as well. And he brought in gambling, and I know a lot of people are against gambling, but it is our number one source of jobs and revenues for the state.
877-217-5757. Producer Matt Doyle, I think we need to try to get Mark to a better place. May need to call him back because this phone line is obviously a bit shaky. And for those of you out and about, we're having another one of those character builders today. The weather is intense. The roads are treacherous. So please be safe. And we hope all of us do well. We're getting another flooding situation potentially, and that's not good, as we know. And it was horrible Monday night, Tuesday morning, and the last thing we need is more of this, but unfortunately, it's here. Now, Mark Ballard mentioned that former Governor Romer was the person who brought gambling to the state. Some might be surprised to that. Many believe it was Edwin Washington Edwards, but it was Charles Elson Buddy Romer. The lottery came in during Romer's term in office, as did the 15 riverboats, and Buddy Romer never really took credit for that, and some would say it's been a drain on the state. Others say, how would we live without the money that it produces? But Romer was a reformer and would seem to have been the last guy to have given us a lottery and 15 riverboats, Mark.
Yeah, it seems that way. And then, and say what you will about the gambling, it does provide a lot of jobs, and it does provide a lot of revenue from an industry that doesn't complain that much, unlike some of our others as well. And also, he started the ethics, the the ethics codes, I guess, is that that's not quite right. But, I mean, think about back in his time that going to prison, sending a state official to prison was, you know, pretty much every day. And now we don't have that many going to prison, and a large part of that is having that those ethics laws in place, which he started.
I recall when he took office, he accented the five E's, ethics, energy, the environment, education, and the economy. And he, in many ways, was a transformative person in those areas. I do recall some of the things he did. Mark didn't receive good responses from the people he was looking at. For example, he had an environmental scorecard. That one was not liked.
Yeah, he was also, yeah, that a lot of what he did caused a lot of controversy. And his efforts to kind of bring in the environment or, you know, to impose some sort of responsibility on the environment, I think caused him a lot of pain politically. But in the end, I mean, it's probably well, because you remember back in the day that they used to take hazardous waste and just kind of dump them in various swamps. And that does not happen now as much.
Well, the beat goes on at the Capitol, and Mark is front and center. And yesterday, a story that is front page above the fold in the Advocate today, Senate okays sports betting setups. Operations could be ready by football season. It was a 31-6 vote. Mark, it appears that Louisiana, over the course of a generation, has become a gambling mecca.
It does appear that way. Remember that this was a vote that was taken statewide back in November, and I think it got 65% approval. Only nine parishes decided not to do it, but in some parishes it was over 70%, 75% for doing sports betting, and that's what they basically, I think as Senator Ronnie Johns went to the floor and kind of summed it up altogether as saying, you know, yeah, I know you're against gambling, but, you know, 65% of your constituents are not, and we need to be putting together the best possible structure we can.
How will it work? How will it work based on this legislation?
Okay, well, first of all, there's three separate bills in the package, and this one is the structure. This is the regulation of it. And what it will work is that each of the casinos, and there are 20 of them, casinos that are also in racetracks and the Harrah's and then the riverboats, they'll get a license, and then they'll set up a little corner that'll be for sports betting, and it's probably be more than a corner than that. And then each one of those will have the ability to license or to hire or to contract apps. People are companies that provide gambling apps for smartphones. So there'll be 40 of those out. And so how it will work, and then the Louisiana Lottery will be in charge of putting up kiosks in bars and restaurants and that sort of thing. So how it will work is basically you can go to a casino and sit in their lounge and watch the games and make bets at a window. Or you could go to, walk-ons or one of those sports bars and do the same thing. Or you could be sitting at your table with your family and wanting to bet, and you can do it from a kiosk at a restaurant. Or you can just do it on your telephone. And as long as you're in one of those parishes that said yes to gambling, you'll be able to make bets on the telephone. There's going to be a fee about $250,000 for the initial licenses, and it'll be about $500,000 for 5 years. And then on top of that, there'll be a tax, and forgive me if I get this wrong, but I think it's about 10% for regular bets at the windows and kiosks and 15% for bets made over your cell phone.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard, Tom in Woodland Ridge. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mark. Another example of Louisiana's misplaced priorities. So we have sports gambling and all the terrible things that come with gambling addictions and what it may do to the integrity of college sports. But legalizing marijuana, which 33 states have now seen the benefits of, and all of the income generation from it, we just can't see our way clear to. What is the problem?
A lot of people would say that there's not a problem here, but there's certainly a difference of opinion. But as I had predicted, but I didn't realize how much support legalization had. That doesn't look like that's going to happen. But decriminalization likely will happen, and that's and I think that's a move towards reality, and the reality is, and even the law enforcement community, which was very much against legalizing it this year, has acknowledged that we're on that path, and it'll happen soon.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard of The Advocate, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Another 3 weeks to go in the legislative session, and some measures are rounding the turn and heading for home. And the governor, of course, is on the fence on some of these matters, including the concealed carry measure, although he has said he will veto that. That is one in which his position is definitive. And Mark Ballard, when we look at the governor, he's been pro-gun, and as he stated on his radio show yesterday, he is First Amendment all the way, but believes this is our Second Amendment all the way, but this is an infringement on the safety of the citizens.
Right. I think the big problem that they had, and law enforcement is way against this bill, and in which it basically says that you don't need to have a permit to conceal carry a weapon. And with that permit comes a certain amount of training so that people know how to handle the guns. And so what they're concerned about is a bunch of people walking around not knowing quite how to handle the guns, but with guns on their persons. And that's what he's against. But the NRA may be having troubles around the rest of the country, but they're not having troubles in Louisiana.
No, and Louisiana, as we know, is Trump territory. Donald carried our state by just about 400,000 votes, and that was evident yesterday as once again the five Republicans in lockstep, Steve Scalise, Clay Higgins, Garrett Graves, Julia Letlow, Mike Johnson, they all voted against a House measure to back a commission to look at the January 6th insurrection, and it was supported not only by the Democratic majority in the House, but also by 35 Republicans, Mark, but in Louisiana, as we saw with Graves and Higgins and Scalise and Johnson, they all voted to negate the election. I don't know that any of them have actually said Joe Biden is the president of the United States fair and square.
Scalise has actually said it. He didn't say fair and square. He just acknowledged
He just said he's the president.
He acknowledged that he's the president.
He's the president. Okay. All right. At least that's something. Paul,
but it comes back to the politics of, there's, I think, 80%, I forgot, 75-80% of the Republicans believe that it was stolen, and so they're looking out for their seat, and they saw what happened to Liz Cheney, and they're looking out for their seat.
Paul in Magnolia Wood. Paul, you're on with Mark.
Hi, Mark and Jim. This is Buddy Romer was also very pivotal in getting the coastal restoration program in Louisiana underway. The first coastal restoration bill passed in 1989 in a special session, and it did that because Buddy Romer promised to take it up when the regular session was in its last days, and he'll always be remembered for that. And I think about that often.
Paul, did you work for the governor?
I did not work for Buddy Romer, but I worked for subsequent governors. And I was a college professor lobbying for coastal restoration. And I did meet with the governor on that bill.
Well, the governor, Romer, 88 to 92, hard to believe he's been gone now for almost 30 years from the mansion, but he was ahead of the pack on many things, including the environment, no doubt about it. He was a Republican and a conservative on economic issues, but on issues like the environment, he was definitely not in the same camp with the Republicans who were on Capitol Hill today, Mark.
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I think he reflected a more conservative viewpoint at the time, but we have since that time shifted further to the right.
Isn't that something? And Louisiana is a state that is affected more by climate change and coastal erosion than any other state, and yet our delegation is in some ways not even in sync with the people in the middle of the country who don't even have to deal with these things to the same extent we do.
No, but to be fair, they are after money to help restore our coast. I mean, they have very different ideas about having to do it. Democrats seem to think that the oil companies that created much of this problem ought to be ponying up some of the money, whereas the Republicans are more after to get the federal government to come in.
Patrick in Innisfail States, you're on with Mark. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, I heard you guys talking about the Congress looking into the January 6th revolution. Are they going to look into, like, you know, we don't have, we have a lot of mail-in voting. We now have states that don't require voter ID. We have voting software that nobody understands.
All right. I think people understand it completely. They just don't want to acknowledge that Donald Trump lost the election. You may be in that number, Patrick, but Donald Trump lost in a landslide. And Mitch McConnell stated that. He said he was trying to create the impression of, quote, a reverse landslide. Well, if something is a reverse, that means that it was a landslide. And it was. Trump lost by about the same number of votes as Mike Dukakis did in 1988. He got his rather ample backside whipped. And Mark Ballard, it's amazing that something, an attack on the U.S. Capitol, is being met with such resistance as far as trying to find out who was responsible and how it can never happen again.
Well, it's all tied up into that narrative that the election was stolen, that Donald Trump has been pushing and has been punishing people that don't believe, you know, and don't stand behind it. And I think that's what it's tied up. I can't imagine how this has not been already investigated in, you know, and hearings held and that sort of thing. I don't know, but, you know.
Jim and Walker. Jim, you're on with Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen. The Capitol treasonous insurrection that occurred, the people who attacked the Capitol were doing so with Blue Lives Matter flags and using those flagpoles as spears. They were calling the officers there all kinds of names that cannot be repeated on the radio here. And yet our senators and congresspeople from this state claim that Blue Lives Matter and that they back the blue, and yet they don't actually.
There were police officers attacked that day. Some lost their lives. Mark, seems like a no-brainer to try to find out what happened, but some people want to put this behind us. I don't know that we'll ever put it behind us. I think all of us alive on January 6, 2021 will remember what happened.
Well, I think, you know, the Civil War is still a major part of our culture and being in the South. And so, I mean, yeah, will we be able to put this behind us? I don't think. I think it'll be with us for a long, long time.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil?
Good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, there's something I'm calling the millionaire's Maginot Line, and it's a line drawn between the ruling class. stay with me here. Because
all right. Well, we don't have time. We've got to go to a break. But we were actually talking about the insurrection, not economic disparity. So we're trying to stay on topic as much in our remaining moments with Mark Ballard, Phil. But 877-217-5757, and we will have Ray Strother joining us shortly. But we'll get some final thoughts from Mark Ballard, both about what's happening in Baton Rouge and in the Beltway. And it's been an interesting session. And a listener asks about the friction with the Education Committee. Has that been resolved, or is that still ongoing?
Well, that's a good question. The chairman of the Education, the guy that Ray Carafala, who started all of this, says that he was fired. And but the guy that would fire him, Clay Schexnider, says, no, I'm not sure that's true, but he won't comment on it. As Schexnider is not a friend of the press and does not like to talk in public.
We'll be back with Mark and hear from Ray Strother after this pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Coming next, we will hear from Ray Strother, the legendary political consultant. We're wrapping up with Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, newspaper of record in our state. And the House, the Louisiana House, failed to pass a tax swap that was sought by reformers. The vote was fairly close. Mark, your thoughts.
Well, it's also fairly controversial. This is mainly what they're aiming to do is to get rid of the federal income tax deduction on state income taxes, which is used by a very few people in the state, but it sucks up a lot of money out of the federal out of the state budget. And so they want to do that and then apply that savings to lowering the tax rates. Now, they got the first part of that done, but they need to, it needs to be a statewide vote, and they came up four votes shy of that. The sponsor of the bill, Stuart Bishop from Lafayette, says he's going to take another run at it. You know, it was close enough that he'll be able to take another run at it. He's going to do that either today, tomorrow, over the weekend, but soon.
Yeah, he got 66 votes, so it was an overwhelming majority, but needs 70. Needs four more votes. Now he knows where he needs to shop for those votes. Finally, more than a few of our listeners asked about the story that also is front page today. Louisiana state troopers captured on body camera videos, stunning, punching, and dragging a black man as he apologized for leading them on a high-speed chase, are under investigation. And the man who was who died in this event, Ronald Green, can be heard saying, "I'm your brother. I'm scared. I'm scared." White troopers jolted Green and with a stun gun, and before he gets out of his car along a dark rural road. And this one happened 2 years ago. Why did it take so long to become public, part of the public domain, Mark? And where is this one going?
I think this is going to will end up in court as well, and with the state trooper being fired in the end. But it took so long because we are not a transparent state, as many are not, and there was protection for that. You know, that the trooper was had been led on a high speed chase, and emotions were up, and that sort of thing.
Mark, always a pleasure to get your insights, and we'll be calling again next week. Thank you, sir.
Have a good weekend, guys.
You too.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. We're joined now by Ray Strother, a legendary political consultant. Much to catch up with Ray about from his perch in Bozeman, Montana. He's a traveling man. He was in Seattle yesterday, and now he's joining us from his home in God's country. And he was the political consultant for one Buddy Romer. He led the Romer Revolution to victory in 1987, and then, of course, there was 1991, which was not a pleasant outcome. And during his term, as we know, the governor switched parties from Democratic to Republican. And Ray Strother, I think in your career in Washington, you've worked for exactly one Republican, and his name is Buddy Romer.
Yeah, I segued into him. He was a Democrat, and I was living in the mansion at the time when he changed, and I didn't know what to do. And I went home and back to Washington, D.C., and buddy kept communicating with me, why aren't you doing my campaign? I said, because you're a Republican. He said, look, before we were running against Edwin Edwards. We're still running against Edwin Edwards. Before, he named about five issues that we agreed on. We agreed on those issues. I still agree with those issues. What's changed? The letter D to the letter R? He said, if I were in prison, would you bring me cigarettes? He was a smoker. I said, yeah, I'd bring you cigarettes. He said, and he came up with three or four scenarios. If I had this problem, would you help me as a friend? I said, of course I would. He said, but if I change from D to R under the same circumstances, still run against Edwin Edwards, you run like a scalded dog away from me? And I said, I'll think about it. So anyway, I went back to him and moved back into the mansion. And I think it was probably the greatest mistake of my life.
Yeah, Romer was he was reeling from a divorce. He was also reeling from the Louisiana legislature giving him grief with a shadow governor not so far away in Edwin Edwards. And he got his taste of Louisiana politics in a most substantial way.
Well, in some ways, he just wasn't conditioned for Louisiana politics, although he'd spent his entire life in it. He was headstrong. He didn't believe in compromising with him. He didn't have high regard for most of the legislators. They would come to the mansion and want to see him, and he would tell the guards, tell them I'm not in. And he would go to a restaurant. We'd go to Superior Grill out on Government Street a lot for lunch. And he would pick a seat way back where people couldn't see him and put his back to the crowd so nobody would bother him. Well, you know, if Edwin Edwards had walked into that, he would have gone table to table and shaken every hand in the house. But that wasn't Buddy's nature. And he wanted to put everything on an intellectual plane. And unfortunately, Louisiana doesn't work on an intellectual plane.
I recall interviewing Bill Press, who was the spokesperson for Jerry Brown when he was governor of California the first time, and he said that that Brown had many of the same qualities as Romer. He was by nature an introvert, and Romer, by the way, once you got to know him, he was anything but an introvert. But
right,
same's true of Jerry Brown. But Brown wouldn't even sign autographs when he was governor.
No, that's right. And Buddy, as you say, one-on-one or even with small groups, Buddy was splendid. We'd have lunches at the mansion almost every day. He called me Cottonwood. I just published a novel called Cottonwood, so he called me Cottonwood. He would say, Cottonwood, tell us a story about politics. And it'd be EJ or so and a few people sitting around the table. Everybody would laugh and we'd tell stories. But then he would go up to his room and lock himself up and read and listen to Lyle Lovett records and not see legislators.
Yeah, he had his passions. One of them was reading, of course, and we've already heard this week from others that that he brought books to football games. He brought books to church. Joe Tregel used to tell me he would bring books to business meetings, and that was probably his greatest passion in life, is that you almost always saw him with a book in hand.
What was interesting, in our campaign headquarters, there was a little room in the back, just a little room probably we should store junk in. And he would go back there and read. As the campaign went on, he wouldn't go out and campaign. He'd read books. The interesting thing about him, his intellect was so keen. You know, he graduated from Harvard very, very young. He, you know, everything about him was, he was incredibly bright. He read trashy literature. He read detective books. He read, you know, he didn't read heavy things. He read escape literature. And this was after his breakup with Patty, so that may have had something to do with it. But he read, my God, one or two, three, four, five detective stories or mysteries a week. He was constantly reading. But he was a fascinating man. What's fascinating about him is from the time he lost, I never spoke to him again.
Really? Really?
No. He cut himself off. I sent him, when I wrote the book, Falling Up, I sent it to him. I said, I would appreciate your looking at this, and if I said anything that embarrasses you, I will take it out. I never heard from him.
Never heard from him. That surprises me.
Yeah, I never heard from him.
Well,
that was interesting. So, you know, I can't say we were close friends. We were business associates.
He did acknowledge to me once that both of his ex-wives were born on October 18th. as was Lee Harvey Oswald, who killed his hero, John Kennedy, purportedly. And so were you, Ray. He knew your birthday.
That's right. No, he had a steel trap mind, and I always admired it very much and enjoyed my time around him, except it was extremely frustrating to try to move him from A to B. Very hard. I thought when David Duke got the race that we needed to do certain things about our message. And he said, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Don't worry about David Duke. Well, I was worried about David Duke the whole time, and David Duke beat him. So, he and I had a little different idea about racism in Louisiana.
Well, you have stated, and Ray has worked for some of the most intelligent people in national politics over the last half century, Bill Clinton, Albert Gore, but you told me the two most intelligent people you worked for were Gary Hart and Buddy Romer.
That's right. And I put Bill Clinton in there real close. He's a great intellect, but Hart was a pure intellect. He was a Harvard-style intellect, although he went to Yale, I think. But those two intelligent people, you know, I always felt I better watch myself because not only were they well-educated and well-read, they had great memories. So you had to be really careful how you conducted yourself.
Jason in Jones Creek says, sorry to hear about Governor Romer. He was the first candidate I ever voted for governor in 1987. I liked him through the years, had the pleasure of meeting him and his wife Scarlett at Estruma Baptist Church. It was valiant to cope with diabetes so long for him. Now, you saw him, and I saw him too. At times, his personality would change because of the physiology of diabetes. When he would have those sugar incidents, or low or high, it would affect him.
That's right. And he carried Hershey bars in his pocket for the lows. And it would affect his personality. And a lot of times, he wouldn't talk about it. He'd just go to his room in the mansion and close the door and just allow love it again. Well, he took a shot or whatever he did. He was a little mercurial. I'll never forget, we were trying to get to the message, the Romer Revolution, and we knew the revolution was firmly fixed. That was going to be part of our campaign. But I was more adamant than he, and I wanted everything too hot, like for a revolution. I had it burn into the screen with fire and smoke, and he said, no, you can't do that. And so, you know, we kept making adjustments, but the message that worked, I love Louisiana. I don't love Louisiana politics. The one that really worked, called Angry. I wrote, sitting in my Washington library, looking out the window, I remember some guy was breaking into a car outside my window, which was a regular thing, so I didn't even call the police because they never came.
We'll be back with Ray Strother after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 for Ray Strother. We're going to talk to him about what's happening in Washington as well, but Mary Patricia Ray writes, since Governor Romer left Louisiana to go to college, he was an outlier and sometimes gave the impression he saw the state as inferior. His veto was overridden one time on a defining issue for every politician in our state since Roe v. Wade. Was he a strong governor because he was willing to tell us when we were wrong, or was that a weakness, asked Mary Patricia Ray Strother.
Yeah, good question, and phrased well. It was both. It was a weakness and a strength. You know, he's a man who believed in things, and we all want that. We don't want a wishy-washy person. Mm-hmm. But he didn't compromise enough, particularly the legislature, and he didn't play Louisiana politics well enough. And did he look down on Louisiana? In some places, I think he did. Not that he was an elitist. I don't think he was an elitist, maybe intellectually. But he looked down on people. For example, a legislator that went in and said, why are you allowing these colleges to increase the entrance requirements? Most students who are A and B students leave the state after they get the degree. Why don't we give scholarships to C and D students? He just looked and shook his head. You know, it's inexplicable that people would even think that. So she's right. Both ways.
Mike in New Iberia. Mike, you're on with Ray.
Hello?
Yes. What's your question, Mike?
Yes. I met Buddy Romer one time in a social setting when he was a banker, And he asked me if I was married. I said, I was married. I've been married for 34 years. He said, I got you beat, but I had to stack three wives to do it.
Always. He was somewhat, thank you, Mike, he was somewhat self-deprecating about his marital history.
Well, not just that, Jim. He had an incredible sense of humor. At times, it was a knife edge, like that. That was a great example of Romer humor. I stacked up three wives.
Yeah, that is true. But he will be missed at Barnes & Noble and in other haunts that he had. He had his habits, and you could find him at Waffle House, and he was a man about town. And interesting that he embraced Baton Rouge, because he had lived in Washington. He had lived, of course, in New England when he was in college. He was from Bossier Parish, and he grew up in part at 718 Bourbon Street in New Orleans with his grandfather, who ran Walker Romer Dairy. But yet he chose Baton Rouge to spend the last half of his life.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. After he left office, I thought he'd go back to plantation in Bossier. But he didn't. He did like Baton Rouge. I think intellectually he found it better suited to him than and politically than Shreveport.
And he became a successful business person here with Business First Bank and other ventures, the Sterling Group with Joe Tregel. He did well in that area, and in fact, the great irony is he may have done better in business than he did in politics, and as we know, his passion was politics. Now, Ray Strother, yesterday the U.S. House voted overwhelmingly to launch an investigation into the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Even 35 Republicans joined the Democrats. And yet our delegation, all five of the Republicans, Garrett Graves, Clay Higgins, Steve Scalise, Mike Johnson, Julia Letlow, they all voted not to do it. Why would somebody vote not to have an investigation of what has been the seminal moment in this year's history?
First of all, they should be ashamed that something so dramatic happened and we want to turn our backs on it. I can't imagine anyone doing that. What they're trying to do is, what the party is trying to do is protect some of their members who are up to their elbows in it, in my opinion. I think there were some people conspiring with the rioters. And I think they know that they could upset Congress if there's an investigation. It could go all the way back to Trump. And Trump being their leader right now, they know that they could wreck the party. I think it's about survival, but there's no excuse for it. You can't allow the Capitol to be sacked for the first time since the British did it. And then turn your back and say, oh, that was yesterday. It wasn't yesterday. It was just a few months ago. And I would have thought higher even of them as Republicans than I do now. They're not worthy of holding office.
In New York, there is now a full-bloom investigation against the former president. The state attorney general is handling this one. It's into his finances, involves family members as well, the Trump Organization. Do you think this has merit?
Yes, I do. Before he ran, the rumor in Washington and around was he was a criminal. In New York, he was a businessman. It didn't affect us, but he was always walking close to the line. And so a lot of people, before he was nominated, didn't think he could get nominated because of his vulnerabilities, criminal vulnerabilities, having to do with taxes and false statements and a lot of things. But he went ahead and ran and won. And seems to be forgiven for that. But those misdeeds are still there, and they're being investigated now. If he had not been president of the United States, I suspect he would go to jail. I've seen Louisiana politicians go to jail for a lot less, 10 times less, who didn't deserve it, really, tell you the truth. And he deserves it. I don't say anybody puts the next president in jail, but I don't think justice will be served till he's looking out behind bars.
Well,
and that's kind of a strong statement, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but if he's convicted, it would be hard to imagine on something like this. It would be hard to imagine that he would not receive some sort of jail term. And this one, as we know, Ray, would be in a state facility, and there's a big difference between Angola and Oakdale when people are serving time.
Yeah, no golf courses for one thing, but. I really fear that, too, though. Although I think justice would be served by him being convicted, I fear what would happen in the country. If we think that insurrection last time was bad, I bet it would be worse. I'm just guessing. But I fear either way, to tell you the truth.
I fear for my country, you know, which I dearly love.
Well, in Louisiana, he won here by over 399,000 votes, and this is a red state, and no doubt that a Republican has a hard time challenging Donald Trump. But why would a vote to investigate the January 6th insurrection be an insult to Donald Trump? I don't know what would be the fear here.
It leads back to him. An investigation will lead right back to Trump as part of the one of the instigators, or if not one of the plotters of the whole thing. I think all the short roads that we take lead to him. It's and they know that. And we have an election coming up in a few months. People forget it. These House members run every 2 years. And right now they need a united Republican Trump party, not Republican Party. They need a united Trump party because of places like Louisiana. They can't afford to be shown aiding and abetting a criminal. So, no, that's just pretty obvious why they don't want an investigation. Although they spent millions investigating Benghazi. God, Benghazi this, Benghazi that. That's okay. Nothing came of that.
And Hillary Clinton testified for 11 hours, too.
Yeah, 11 hours. Made them look like monkeys.
Well,
they don't want to investigate.
I can
this,
only imagine was, if Donald Trump testified for 11 hours.
Oh, my God. Of course, he wouldn't do that because he can't tell the truth more than 5 minutes at a time.
Andy in Goodwood. Andy, you're on with Ray Strother.
Hey, Ray. I hope you and Sandy are doing well. Real quick, one intellectual answer to why the Democrats shouldn't expand the Supreme Court. Thank you.
All right. Well.
I'm a traditionalist. I don't think it should be expanded, but that's my personal opinion. You know, Roosevelt tried it. As I read history, you know, he wasn't my president because I wasn't born yet. But anyway, well, I guess I was. I was born in 40, and yeah, but not beyond my memory anyway. But I would hesitate to expand the Supreme Court. I don't like it right now. I don't like the composition of it right now, but that's the way America works, and it's worked pretty well so far.
But the luck of the draw, though, in the last 50 years, Republican nominees have made up more than 70% of those who went to the court. And you've got Jimmy Carter, who was president for 4 years and had no Supreme Court justices, and Donald Trump, who was president for 4 years and had three. So should there be, independent of whether the court should be expanded, should there be term limits?
I think that'd be a good idea. I think term limits is a different thing. I think that would help. You could make them long, but probably term limits would be good. It's, you know, funny, the qualified presidents didn't get appointments, and the most unqualified president we ever had three. I mean, there's something, it is luck of the draw. It just, we drew a bad hand, America.
A listener has a good point. Stephen Breyer is in his 80s. He's had some health issues, as people often do when we get older, but he is hanging on. Now, at what point should he give up his Supreme Court seat, or will he be another Ruth Bader Ginsburg and stay too long and end up having an opening for his seat when a Republican is president?
Well, that could be. I don't think anyone wants to give up their seat. There's never a president who wants to step down from office. There's never a senator who doesn't want to run for one more term. Well, there is occasionally, but very seldom. It becomes their life, not part of their life. It becomes their life. And so being a member of the Supreme Court has to be an exalted life, one that we would all like to live. And you don't. It's hard, I'm sure, to walk away from it.
Well, Ray Strother, it is always good to get your take, and glad you are still opining from your beautiful home with your amazing wife, Sandy, in Bozeman, Montana. Thank you, Ray.
Well, thanks.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for Talk Louisiana. Back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.